We'll commence the January 10, 2015 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. No update since December 31st about how Amateur Radio Newsline co-founder and producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is recuperating from his home accident that has prevented him from producing Newsline the past few weeks. However, to help fill the Newsline void, we're replaying a 1990 extended interview that Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, conducted with Bill. Bill has been a licensed ham since 1958. He is retired from the video side of the broadcast biz from Fox TV in Los Angeles. Bill was named Amateur of the Year in 1989 by DARA, the Dayton Amateur Radio Association. Here's our second excerpt from Hap's 25-year-old interview with the man behind Newsline, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
Now, the newscast goes online Friday. Most of the time, it's going to be online the full week, unless you have an update. What bearing that that newscast may not air somewhere until the following Wednesday or Thursday does that have on what stories you use?
It has no bearing on it. The only potential it has is if something major changes, we will update. The newscast, we hope, is as accurate as possible at the moment of release, and that's all we can guarantee. No different than the television station doing a newscast, and then a big fire happens right after the news goes off the air, or they can't really worry about what the guy on Wednesday or Thursday of the following week is going to say. And the same holds true for a newspaper. I mean, once a newspaper goes to press, it's gone to press. Well, it's the same with us. I mean, we can only do so much, and we try and be as accurate as possible to the moment of air. We do have, of course, the ability with the instant update line, which is a new facility, located, by the way, at my house. It's the only place we could put it where it could be instantly updated, where if a major story breaks, we will cut a cassette real quick, put it online, and people know the call there. If they hear a rumor that something may have happened and they call that number, probably they're going to hear a fairly accurate story on what is transpiring.
Bill, you touched on this earlier regarding how you determine the real stories from the erroneous ones. What criteria do you use to determine of the stories you do have, which ones you'll cover?
I'll start by telling you that the hardest thing to do is to throw away news that you know is good news, and you know that if you don't air it that particular week, it's dead news. There's an expression in the news business, there's nothing older than yesterday's news, and that's very true. The criteria I use is what affects the most number of licensed United States amateurs. Not that I want to be derogatory to the rest of the world, but our service is mainly geared towards the United States and to U.S. hams who live in other parts of the world to know what's going on. So what's going to be the most important item that's going to affect the lives of most amateurs? Well, a story about the U.S. Supreme Court telling a gentleman in Iowa that he has no right to sue or his neighbors or the police over they're listening in on his cordless phones may be interesting. Is it an amateur radio story? Or is it a communication story? It's a communication story, so does it belong in the A section? Is it an amateur radio major news item or not? It's interesting, yes, but it's not a major amateur radio story. So that would go to the B section, which is exactly where the second section after the break of the news, which is where it belongs, even though it is a Supreme Court finding, because it doesn't directly impact on the ham. Whereas a decision by the American Radio Relay League to petition for HF automatic packet and do so in spectrum that most U.S. hams don't want them to go to for it is, and the league giving its reasons. And the reasons are cooperation with other countries, and the league happens to be right. But the majority of U.S. hams don't feel that they want to change or don't want the frequencies used that the rest of the world uses. Well, it's a major story because that's going to impact on a lot of people. Another very important story, and an ongoing one, is this 14313 thing, which will be with us for a long time. The story itself is dead because the problem on 313 has gone away. But the protagonists, having gone to the FCC and forced the issue with the commission, have created a whole new set of circumstances that can eventually impact every licensed amateur under FCC license. Can you imagine the FCC saying that there can be no more bulletins because four or five people on one frequency couldn't get along? I mean, this is almost absurdity when you think about it. But this is something that could eventually impact on UHAP, on me, and everybody who listens to both of our new services, and every ham who wants to find out what's happening, every ham who wants to make a phone patch. For example, if God forbid, they ban phone patching, they're going to have to ban auto patching as well. I mean, it's not one or the other. It's not just because you sit on your repeater that you're immune to what's happening on the HF bands and vice versa. Rules can't be made for a group of hams who operate in one particular part or one particular band. They're made to affect all of us. So these are the things that we watch, and these are the things that affect more people than does a finding by the Supreme Court that it's not going to hear a case dealing with a guy whose neighbors overheard his telephone conversation. And I think maybe those examples place things in perspective. At least I hope they do. The format of the show, and I'll call it a show for lack of a better term, is identical to the old NBC News on the Hour, the old 10-minute NBC News on the Hour. At the time, we had listened to the CBS version, the NBC version, ABC version, and all the rest of the stuff. And it, by far, the NBC format of news reporting seemed the best to us. Maybe we were a little partial because Bill was with NBC and I had kind of more access to their style, but I liked it. Since I was kind of, I don't want to sound selfish, but since I was the guy who had to make the decision on what way we're going to go, I kind of eased into the old NBC News on the Hour. And that's what we've remained with, basically. The big change came when we went to the opening announce, which came about because of Bob Sudock, WB6FDF, imposing on a friend of his and a friend of mine over at the station to record the original From Around the World intro. That was Bob's idea, and it stayed with us ever since. We tried to get rid of it for a while just to see what would happen. We got a lot of letters that said, hey, whatever happened to that great deep-voiced announcers? When we changed our name to Newsline, we also came up with a new announcer. By the way, that's Jeff Clark, NADTN, who you hear at the beginning of each newscast, going from around the world, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But Jeff recorded those for us. He's someplace in Michigan, I think, these days. It seems that that's one of the most popular portions, I guess, of our news operation. That deep announce that says it's here each week. I don't know why, but people really missed it when it was gone for about 10 or 12 weeks.
From around the world, this is Newsline, amateur radio's independent, on-the-air bulletin service. Now, here is this week's report.
You're in the midst of an extended interview Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, conducted back in 1990 with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, the man behind the amateur radio newsline. We'll resume our second excerpt from Hap's lengthy conversation with Bill in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available via Twitter at #TheRainReport and online on TheRainReport.com.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.TheRainReport.com.
What are your feelings about other information services that have surfaced?
Frankly, I'm glad to see that hams are finally becoming aware of what's going on around them. They're becoming knowledgeable, and I give a lot of praise to everybody who's trying and trying hard. Not everybody succeeds. A lot of these have started and failed, but somebody said to me at Dayton that I was the granddaddy of it all. Actually, Jim Hendershot probably is the granddaddy of this all, but if we've done one thing, it's to educate. And I'm a firm believer in education. And if this education has made amateurs more aware of themselves and the world around them and their hobby and their service and their community and the responsibilities to it, and it has led some of them into service to the rest of the amateur community, hey, I'm glad we did it. I'm not patting myself on the back. If I'm patting anybody on the back, it's Jim Hendershot. Because without Jim Hendershot sitting there munching on that ice cream and saying, let's start a news service, there would have not have been a West Link Amateur Radio News. There probably would have not been an East Link. There probably would have not been the RP reports. None of this would have taken place. So Jim is the one who really deserves a pat on the back for it all. We've kept it going. We're responsible for the longevity of it. But there wouldn't be what's here today, and there wouldn't be this pretty well-educated amateur community, I don't think, if it wasn't for all of the services. And you might not agree with what some of them do. That's not what's important. What's important, I think, is the fact that they're there and that they serve a purpose.
What's your editorial policy?
Our editorial policy is that we're human beings. And as such, we're going to probably have opinions. Theoretically, if you read the precept of Sigma Delta Chi, you know that news is supposed to be totally objective without feeling. It's supposed to be delivered without opinion. So far, I've only heard one successful newscast that meets all that criteria, and that's the BBC. I have more love for the BBC and more respect for it than probably any other news organization in the world. How they're able to get past their own personal feelings and do a purely objective newscast is always something I've marveled at. I guess since I was old enough to understand, since I sat in front of that big Philco back in Brooklyn, New York, and listened to the This Is London bop with their little jingle. But I'm going to be honest. Newsline is not the BBC. We're human beings. We're hams. We're involved. I mean, if you think about it, most of the time people reporting news are not involved in the news. We can't help it. We're involved in the news. Fred Meyer's involved in the news, 5YI. I mean, Fred became the first national VE because no one else was willing to do it. He got involved. And we feel the same level of involvement. We're involved in the community. So we're going to have an opinion. And sometimes, yes, because I'm writing most of what you hear, my opinion may sneak in now and then. And what I do is I go over the scripts, hopefully pull out my opinion, but sometimes it's going to sneak in. But we don't have a personal opinion as such. We try and let the opinion of the report stand for itself. But again, we're human beings. I would be very surprised if at times my opinion didn't sneak in. Or if another person is writing it, another writer's opinion did sneak in. A very good example. And I hate to go back to this net mess situation, as we've come to call it. We give buzzwords to everything. So the 14.313 became the net mess situation, or the 20-meter net mess. Where I wrote a very objective, straight report before the first FCC letter on this and gave it to my reporter, one of the out-of-town people. I don't remember who recorded it, which said, our opinion, cut it out. Basically saying to these people, straighten up your lives and fly right or get off the air. This is ham radio. This isn't where you fight your feuds. And I heard the tape and I said, should I leave it in or should I leave it out? And I was listening on the air and listening to comments of the average ham. And the average ham seemed to feel the same way as my anchor man did. And I said, I'm going to leave that in. And I took the responsibility and left it in. Apparently, a couple of people's feathers got ruffled, but those were people who were involved in the controversy. By and large, the feedback on that particular thing was that we did the right thing. I challenge you. Close your eyes and listen to the audio of a TV station, including cable news network, by the way, or a radio newscast on commercial radio. Close your eyes and listen to it and listen to what's being said, and you'll be shocked at how much opinion is involved and the opinion of the writers or the reporters are involved. With the exception of the BBC and possibly Radio Netherlands, although they do tend to opinionate their news a little bit, there's virtually nothing in the world that I've ever come across anyway, other than those that are so totally objective as to be close to the Sigma Delta Chi perfect. I hope that answers your question. I know it may have been sound a little ambiguous, but that's what I'm trying to explain. Is basically, I don't think it's possible, with the exception of what the Beeb has done, to not put a little of your own opinion in, especially if you're involved in the community.
Why did the name change from Westwind to Newsline?
The name change came about because of a mix-up between two services, both of which I was involved with for a while. The name, first of all, Westlink Radio Network, the original name, came from the name Western Linking Service, which was a repeater, an honest-to-goodness repeater on 146.205.805, which was supposed to be the first of many repeaters on that frequency to link the whole state, Jim Hendershot's project, which never went anywhere. Anyway, he called it the Westlink Repeater. So when Jim started the news, he called it the Westlink Radio News. It aired over his repeater and on 223.5 simplex. That's where the name Westlink comes from. It's the name of a repeater that doesn't exist anymore. We used the name for years and years and years. And then in 1980-81, Ham Radio Magazine decided to phase out its Ham Radio Report, HR Report. And they were looking for somebody to take it over, or they were going to get rid of it, stop publishing it. Skip Tenney, WNNLB, the publisher of the magazine, had Joe Schrader, W9JUV, a friend of yours and mine, approach me and asked me if I wanted to take it over. And at that time, I really couldn't. I was involved with too many other projects. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll write it if I can find somebody who would publish it. And I was looking around, mainly because Joe's a friend of mine. I knew he didn't want to see HR Report go away any more than I did. It was a good vehicle. I think it still is. Anyway, I was talking to a friend of mine, Bert Hicks, WB6MQV. Told him about it. And Bert has always wanted to do something in the way of publishing. So he agreed to publish it if I would write it. The name Westlink, by this time, by the early 80s, had come synonymous with ham radio news. I said, why don't you use the name Westlink and call it Westlink Report? That was a mistake, and it was a mistake for both of us. Commercially, it was a mistake for Bert because people thought it was the same thing that was on the newscasts. For the newscast, it was financial ruin because we exist on donation. people figured that they were sending in donations to subsidize a commercial newsletter, which was not the case. I wrote some of the stories. I was technically the editor of it, but there were a lot of other people writing it, not just me. And I was not getting paid anything. As a matter of fact, I was losing my shirt. But I kept doing it. Bert's a very close friend of mine. I kept doing it until last year, just before Christmas. I phased myself out of that, mainly because I just had too many other projects coming up. And over the years, I've developed some television production and things like that. And you can do so much in a day. And I just had to stretch a day to 25 hours. I phased out of that, but I also, at the same time, and Bert and I had a lot of discussion on this, we've had to change the name of one or the other. We realized after, we learned very hard and it takes a long time, but we realized that you gotta have separate, people don't realize that, yeah, the two may have similar names, but they're not the same entity, and got tired of explaining it. It would have cost Bert a lot of money to change the name of the Westlink Report newsletter, just the cost of the new woodcuts and everything else, well, not woodcuts, you know, the new mastheads and things like that. To change the name of the newscast was just change the name of the newscast, which is exactly what I did. The name Newsline, I'll tell you right now where that comes from. I'm an avid listener of Radio Nederland, also Radio Netherlands these days. A very good friend of mine, Jonathan Marks, GAWGN, does their shortwave listener show. Preceding their listener programming, they have a news-focused type program called Newsline. And that name kept always going through my head, and I always... Since we use telephone lines for gathering and disseminating news, the name sounded a good one, but we didn't want to be confused with Newsline or Radio Netherlands, so we called ourselves the Amateur Radio Newsline. But the corporation name is the Amateur Radio Newsline, Inc.
And that concludes our second excerpt from an extended interview with the man behind Newsline, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. Bill was interviewed 25 years ago by Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain, all rights reserved. For the Rain Report, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.